Welcome to Family by Design, a weekly radio program brought to you by Wellspring Christian Family Schools, the education ministry of WCF Church, located in Sebillesville, Maryland. We hope that today, in some way, we will help you to treasure God's design for your family.
Because the greatest gift a father can give is a life lived for Jesus. And the greatest gift a mother can give is the knowledge of the Lord. Pass him on to your children. He's the gift that keeps on giving. The greatest gift is a life lived for Jesus.
Good afternoon and welcome to Family by Design. I'm Joel Fisher and I am joined again in the studio by pastor and educator Gary Cox. Gary,
hi.
I'm glad that you're back again. Gary, we've been having a great conversation about the recent ruling in the Supreme Court on some same-sex marriage. Last week we talked about the implications of that for the church, particularly for pastors in our country. And if you hadn't, you as a listener haven't heard that, I encourage you to do so. Go to WTHU, look for the audio vault, find Family by Design, and listen to that message. Gary, today we're going to shift our attention to the focus of families and individuals, Christians and couples living in our country, how this affects our reaction to the culture, our reaction to our leaders. And we've kind of started with the premise back a few broadcasts ago that Christians need to be thoughtful. They need to be consistent in their faith and how they approach the culture. We need to understand that we are living in a Gentile nation, in a pagan nation. And I heard a story some years ago that's always stayed with me as an anecdote, an illustration of how important it is for Christians to be consistent and authentic, and that mm-hmm. when we have an expectation of how things ought to be in the culture, we better be ready to see how authentic we really are. Mm-hmm. And the story went something like this, and I really don't know if this was a true story. I heard it in a dramatization. It was an anecdote kind of told in the story, but it's still illustrative because it probably has happened to some degree in our country. And the story was about a group of parents, citizens, who were having a town hall meeting with their congressman. And they had raised the issue with their congressman about how secular the schools had become, our public schools have become, which, of course, we know how secular they have. They're very hostile, prayer is gout, and so on. And they had raised this concern with him and were interested in trying to revive the argument of bringing prayer back into public schools, certainly something that we've heard about and a noble cause for sure. They're concerned about their kids and want that influence back. And the congressman simply asked them a question. He said, you know, I appreciate your concern, but let me ask the parents in this room, and I understand you're Christians, most of you are Christians who are raising this question. He said, in the last 24 hours, how many of you have prayed with your children in your own home? And the way that the story is told is that few, if any, of those parents raised their hand. And he said, look, he said, you cannot expect the government and the public schools to be doing something that you yourself are not doing in your own home with your own children. He said, you know, please consider that as you're wanting to have this issue. And
well, that's really touching on that issue of authenticity and hypocrisy. And the thing about authenticity is people who are authentic do what they do because they have to do it before God, and nobody's going to stop them, no matter what the law says, because they must obey God rather than man. Whereas people who are hypocrites simply participate in whatever the culture provides or offers them, and they don't ask the question. I mean, my greatest gripe of history is that if parents were thoughtful about the environment at schools, and when the school prayer decision was rendered by the Supreme Court years ago, at that time Christian school movement was formed, pretty much, the birth of the private Christian school. But the interesting thing is that while it's a notable movement, and maybe there's as many kids in Christian schools and now homeschools as well, that's equal to maybe the largest county in Maryland in terms of numbers, that's pretty influential. Still, we got like 24 counties, and we're, you know, it's a, you know, barely 3-5% of the student body being cared for under religious concerns. But the bottom line is, when you have a conviction, then you live it out. And you live it out in spite of the culture, not under the permission or the auspices of the culture. And that really brings us to our discussion points for this and the next broadcast, because it touches on the nerve of something that we might call civil disobedience and how you conduct yourself in these arenas. So I think to start with, I would like to just ask a question about, you know, what are you doing as a parent, as a Christian couple when you're getting married? And what are you thinking? We talked last time about the fact that the authentic marriage ceremony recognizes God as the authority, the joiner, and the retainer of the married couple, and so man is forbidden to interfere with that institution that God has ordained. That being the case, marriage occurs without any state and you don't need the state to create marriage, and you don't need the state to manage marriage. Marriage is something that's managed by God, and it's between a man and a woman, and nobody can ever change that. That hasn't been changed by the Supreme Court. They don't have the ability. It's not within their jurisdiction. They can't carry it out. But the Christian, you know, one of the things that Christians often do is they recognize in Romans 13 we're to obey every authority under heaven for the Lord's sake, and they forget about the for the Lord's sake part. And they start just obeying every authority under heaven because it's under heaven, not recognizing that every obedience to an under authority of God has to be accomplished underneath the jurisdiction of the primary obedience to God. So at any time an under authority like the government creates a law that forbids the under, you know, the subject from honoring the primary authority, God, well, he's just dismissed his own law. He doesn't have any authority, and so he's himself acknowledged that he lacks authority, and that individual subject must obey God rather than man.
And incidentally, we have really quite a number of accounts in Scripture from old and new where believers who were God-fearing, who wanted to honor authority, honor proper authority, were faced with that situation. Of course, we've been talking about the context of Daniel.
Right.
And he's in the sense the exhibit A, if you right. will, he and his friends. When they were faced with clear commands to worship gods other than God, or to compromise their faith,
and right, and you're talking about, you know, the fiery furnace, I'm imagining, but it's the amazing part about that story is the king was the supreme authority in the entire earth, as the Scripture portrays it, and so he had devised this golden statue to be worshipped. Because by the dream that Daniel gave from God, he was the King of Kings. His kingdom was the you know, most prominent kingdom in this Gentile era, and so he was really excited about who he was. So he wanted everybody to bow down to him. And so these God-fearing Jews from the first chapter basically said, "Well, you know what? We don't worship anybody but God." And so everybody, all of the rulers, all of the leaders of the kingdom were supposed to come and fall down to this image, and these guys didn't. So they were the only guys left standing. So they were called before the king, and he was furious at him and said, "You're going to get one more chance, and you better bow down." And they said, "Well, king, with all due respect, we can't bow down." Now, as concerning your question who can deliver us from your hand, we want to tell you that the God who gave you that authority, he's able to save us from your hand. But we want you to understand one thing. Even if he chooses not to, we're not going to bow. So that is the core value of a moral fiber, whereby I recognize, and it's really, and for Christians, we really have to go through that process. We'll talk about it with the marriage certificate a little bit in a minute, but what is my conscience before God so that I'm honoring God? And it's about that conscience before God, because when we're careless about our thoughtfulness and we misconstrue cultural idioms with moral practices of our own sincerely held religious beliefs, we can get ourselves confused in the process and make choices that are sloppy and strike against, or potentially, on other hands, you know, make stands where we don't need to be making a stand because it's not the arena of our obligation, of our duty. So those young men simply said, we're going to trust God, and we know he can protect us, and even if he chooses not to, we're going to honor him regardless. And that was the line in the sand. And that answer of conscience is the number one premise by which our country was eventually founded. Men and women having the courage of their convictions to love not their life to the death, honoring God above the king, honoring the king within that proper jurisdiction, but not beyond. And in the ultimate sense, then they win out in terms of that authority being established. So how are we going to process that in this era of this new legal definition? And my short answer is, I don't know, but we probably better be paying attention to the places that this new legal definition infringes on our moral religious beliefs and how we honor God with respects to marriage. So I would, you know, as a pastor, I'm wondering what will be some of the kinds of counsel that I'll bring to potential married couples, and how am I going to handle that process? And I don't know all the answers to it, but I can tell you this: I will bring to the conscience of any couple that comes to me to be married, I'll bring to their conscience the bigger question of, do you want a state marriage license or not? And I'm going to explain to them that this state marriage license is not a valid license of marriage as we have known in former times, and it doesn't represent marriage as God represents it. So do you want your God-ordained marriage to be represented by a certificate that doesn't have any capacity to honor God-ordained marriage? And that's a big question, and it gets to this, there's 50 states, and the Supreme Court has only ruled on this little tiny caveat that if one state extends the right of gay marriage, other states have to honor it. But there's a plethora. If you go online and start doing searches on wedding certificates and things, you'll discover that there's quite an array of marriage arrangements that different states allow for.
Right, for instance.
And different states do not allow for.
For instance, in Louisiana, I believe it is, there's something called covenant marriage, which is different than, I don't know, the other term that they have. So you can specifically ask for something, to believe, that goes to the heart of that issue. So
right, and I don't know covenant marriage fully, but I do know when I heard some proponents of it in the 80s, the purpose of covenant marriage was to bypass the legal definition of marriage that the states had taken hold of, that allowed the state to decide divorces and remarriage on certain legal grounds that bypass the biblical mandate. So a covenant marriage basically forbids divorce, and some states honor it and some states don't. There's also the old traditional, what do you call it, marriage?
I'm not sure.
Common law marriage, thank you. The common law marriage
from the audience.
From England in days yore. So, you know, this is fresh stuff, but think of what the Supreme Court has done. They've mandated that all states respect every other state's guidelines for marriage. I know one thing that I'm going to be doing research and I'm going to be looking around me in terms of jurisdiction, and I'm going to be making recommendations that couples have conscience towards God in discerning what kind of a valid marriage certificate do you want, if you're going to have a marriage certificate at all, or do we go to a common law standard? Now, there's risks in every one, so you have to ask the question. Again, render to Caesar the things that are Caesar's. You're a family living in this society, living in this world, and if there are structural protections and benefits for your wife and your children that having a marriage certificate of a certain type allows for, then you will want to make sure that you provide that protection through that marriage certificate so you don't end up with, you know, a family bereft of, you know, worldly goods because right. of the lack of structure. But the Supreme Court ruling will also lend latitude. So now, if you look at Frederick County's law, Frederick County does not honor covenant marriage. The Supreme Court decision just knocked that out. Now the covenant marriage law of Kentuckians coming to Maryland has to be honored. So Christians can be thoughtful about the kind of public acknowledgement of their wedding, of their marriage that they desire to have for conscience sake before God and before man. And it's going to take a little bit of homework and a little bit of thoughtfulness, but you know, me for one as a pastor, that's going to be a part of any premarital counseling I conduct, because I want them to be fully aware of the responsibility to have their conscience before God and before man and be able to give an answer and to construct their life in that or in that orderly fashion. I'm not going to be condoning or condemning. But then there's the other side of the coin. Will there be a kind of marriage certificate that I will not sign because I will not be an agent of the state, because my primary purpose as a minister of the gospel is to bless Christian marriage as it's ordained in Scripture. So it may be, well, for example, in Maryland, I don't need to sign your marriage certificate. I can conduct your Christian wedding, but if you want to have a marriage certificate honored by the state of Maryland, you can go down to your barber and have him do it while he's cutting your hair. I mean, it's so right. sloppy in Maryland that there's anyone of any kind may simply witness a wedding and it's done. So, in other words, the sloppiness of marriage laws are such that the thoughtful Christian can carefully construct a substantive, meaningful, moral answer to how they're going to conduct themselves. But then you're thoughtful, and somebody says, well, why didn't you get a marriage certificate? Well, we went to Kentucky, and we got married under the covenant marriage law because the Supreme Court has mandated that Maryland honors that, and we want our marriage to be represented as it is in the Scriptures and before God, et cetera, et cetera. So I'm saying, thoughtfulness prevents hypocrisy. And here's the worst thing that can happen. All of a sudden you're stuck and you're, you know, 2 days before your wedding, oh no, I didn't get a marriage license. And you're, you know, suddenly imagining that the state has all this authority to prevent you to get married except on their terms. Poppycock. They can only extend to you certain rights and privileges that the state, Caesar, can offer, and you have to choose whether you want to surrender for those benefits something to Caesar, or retained and simply retain it before God.
Right. On the other side of the issue, kind of going back to how we started the broadcast today, the other significant aspect that Christians need to demonstrate in our culture right now is that consistent adherence to God's view of family and marriage. And one thing that has been a criticism, and in some ways it's a, you know, it's a valid criticism, is how little Christians have valued marriage in certain elements. Mm-hmm. Until now, all of a sudden, now that there is a crisis, now that marriage has been defined so low as it would be, Christians are becoming very passionate about marriage as God's design between one man and one woman for life. Well, the for life aspect of things is certainly not been respected, not been particularly honored, mm-hmm. and not talked about in the churches. And of course, I don't intend in this conversation to get into conversation about marriage and divorce, but the bottom line is that culturally, Christians have been, have joined and been a part of the devaluing of marriage through other means, through, you know, the permanency of marriage, through the reasons why you get married, through, the things that you had talked about earlier when you have a marriage counseling session with people. I mean, you talked about how you didn't do a marriage ceremony for a man and a woman who were getting together,
personal friends.
Personal friends for, really more or less at the end of things, seemingly positive reasons, but because of your understanding of what marriage is, you maintain that. One of the things I love about Daniel is he was so consistent in his adherence and upholding to what God said is true and right and just, that his detractors could not point to inconsistency and hypocrisy as a means of entrapping him. In fact, the means by which they thought they could trap him was his consistency. And we've talked amongst ourselves recently that we live in a culture that is continually going mad.
Right. I think it's an important segue that you made, though, as you mentioned Daniel, because Christians have to face the larger spectrum, that regardless of the law, regardless of the Constitution and the protections that we try to afford ourselves, there is a reality to the fact that the day's coming when we're going to be killed, and whoever kills us think they're doing God a favor. So persecution is real. It's a part of the paradigm of the Christian life and the cross and what we have known in terms of the luxury of freedom of religion in our culture is rapidly eroding. And so Christians must take the full force of their constitutional liberties and defend themselves. But as that defense begins to break up on confusion from the Supreme Court ruling, Christians can't break up their beliefs in accordance. They have to be able to discern what are the things that I must hold as sacred and never surrender, even to the loss of my life. I'm not going to bow down. So when you look at Daniel and his consistency, the reality is, yes, he was persecuted just because of his sincerely held religious beliefs. And yet, at that time, he did what we can all and only do. We trust our case to God who judges rightly. And in this case, like the fiery furnace, the mouths of the lions were silenced, and he was saved, and God was honored, and the king was, the king retained his best counselor.
And a testimony was given, and everybody knew who the God of Daniel was. As we're bringing this particular conversation to a close, I'm reminded of Philippians 2:15 that says that you may be blameless and harmless, the sons of God without rebuke, in the midst of a crooked and perverse nation, among whom you shine as lights in the world. God's call is that we be those bright lights. And this is not original to me, but of course, stars have often been signposts and by means of which people and ships and other places on the earth look for
find their moorings.
And now more than ever does our generation, does our nation, and even our civic leaders, as mad as they have become, as it would, they need those points of light.
And I think that really is kind of a segue to our next broadcast, because we're really going to want to look at the cultural impact and how we conduct ourselves. When do we privatize our behavior to keep it sacred? And when do we recognize that my role as a Christian is not to create a Christian-esque society, but to recognize that the unbelievers are under that jurisdiction of government, and my role is to witness, but not to be the source of, as it were, the sword inflicting judgment on the world before its time. We're in the age of long suffering.
With that, we're going to conclude our conversation today. I hope that it's been encouraging to you, has been thought-provoking to you. And we would love to hear your thoughts. Please contact us. You can email us at radio@wcfs.edu. I'd encourage you to listen to our previous broadcasts in this series. Go to wthu.org. Go to the Audio Vault. Look for Family by Design. You'll find our broadcasts there. Well, next week we're going to conclude our discussions about Daniel and about living in a generation that is in desperate need of light and of truth. Hope you can come back and visit with us as we continue to treasure God's design for your family.
Children houses, and you can give them lands, and the riches of your efforts, and all your best laid plans.
But of all that they inherit, of all that you could will, please include the unseen treasure of a life that God has filled. Cause the greatest gift a father can give is a life lived for Jesus. And the greatest gift a mother can give is the knowledge of the Lord. Pass him on to your children.
Your children.
He's the gift that keeps on giving. The greatest gift is a life lived for Jesus.
Someday the house will crumble. Time will turn the land to dust. And when all accounts are empty, where will you invest their trust?
But if the riches that you give them is the wisdom of his ways, then the wealth you'll leave your children will last through all their days. Cause the greatest gift a father can give is a life lived for Jesus. And the greatest gift a mother can give is the knowledge of the Lord. Pass him on to your children. He's the gift that keeps on giving. The greatest gift is a life lived for Jesus. Is a life lived for Jesus. And the greatest gift a mother can give is the knowledge of the Lord. Pass him on to your children. He's the gift that keeps on giving. The greatest gift is a life lived for Jesus.
Thanks for spending your time with us today here at Family by Design. Join us every Sunday when we will continue this wonderful journey, helping you to treasure God's design for your family.
Cause the greatest gift a father can give is a life lived for Jesus. And the greatest gift a mother can give is the knowledge of the Lord.
pass him on to your children. He's the gift that keeps on giving. The greatest gift is a life lived for Jesus.